Welcome to the On-Call Nightmares podcast. My name is Jay Gordon. And this week, we're going to start off with two episodes. I'm going to refer to it as Infrastructure Week, because both of our interviews are going to be with people who have done a lot in the world of infrastructure. Today, we're going to talk to Melissa Palmer, who's a product strategist over at Veeam. She was kind enough to give me a little bit of her time. She loves pizza, which is really awesome because she's from New Jersey. And as a fellow Northeasterner and a person who lived in New Jersey, I can definitely vouch for the quality of pizza that you can get. So speaking of pizza, I had a party on Friday because I was lucky enough to see DevOps Days NYC 2019 come to an end. So I really wanted to spend some time with some co-workers, or I should say actually some co-volunteers, and some of the speakers. So had a little party, got some time to spend with some really smart people, fun people. Overall, DevOps Days New York City was just a lot of fun. I got really lucky to be part of the organization team this year, and I really learned a lot. Got to talk with a ton of people, got to meet some people that I had never met before, that I really wanted to maybe make a connection with. And maybe I can actually say I've met some new people that are going to be on the podcast in the future. So thanks a lot for kind of sticking around with me as I've been really breaking my butt to kind of get that conference done. And I really think that once you see the all the talks that we're going to have on video, you'll be really impressed with the quality of information that we were able to kind of get. One of the people that I'm really happy was able to kind of speak was Liz Fong Jones. There were some great open space sessions actually on SRE, and we did get a chance to talk about the term, I guess what you would refer to as the term unactionable alerts. And unactionable alerts is still really a big problem for a lot of people. My biggest kind of entry into the world of unactionable alerts had to do with a high memory issue that I dealt with on an Apache server that was running PHP FPM years ago as well. Wasn't an Apache server, actually. It was an Nginx server with PHP FPM. Pardon me. Anyway, PHP FPM would use a ton of memory, and it's just how it worked at that time. And we constantly got alerted on it, and I didn't see a purpose in being alerting on it, because even though memory was high, site reliability and access was still great. So the one thing I've kind of learned in the last few years is templates for monitoring may not always be the best thing, because different situations call for different types of monitoring. And if you just do a blanket monitor for a bunch of stuff, you're going to end up getting a ton of alerts you're not interested in. Well, anyhow, let's move on to the interview. We've got Melissa Palmer. Like I said, she's from Veeam. If you want to find her on Twitter, it's vmiss33. That's V-M-I-S-S-33. Let's get into the interview now. Welcome back to the On-Call Nightmares podcast. I'm Jay, and today we have a guest, which I got to be honest, we met recently because I've been asking people to tell me stories. And one of those people that was lucky enough to reach out to me was Melissa Palmer. Melissa is a product strategy technologist at Veeam. She is an IT infrastructure enthusiast, to which I must say, it's nice to be that if you're going to be in technology. She has worked in the past as a VMware certified design expert, which is terrifying to me because that's so many things. Melissa, you've worked as an engineer, a systems engineer, a solutions architect, technical marketing engineer, something I kind of did myself close in another place, but you've done a whole bunch.
I have, yes. Make
sure. You are on Twitter as vmiss33.
That's correct.
Visualization, miss, M-I-S-S, 33. And you also have a blog called vmiss.net. So, Melissa, I've given you a whole bunch of introduction because, to be honest with you, the cool part about this podcast is I really want to meet strangers. It's part of what I do as an advocate for Microsoft, and I don't like to talk about that too much because this is about you. But one of the best parts about being like an advocate for Microsoft is I go out into the world and I kind of get to talk to everybody. And sometimes I just want to hear a story. And so, Melissa, I want you to tell me a story today.
I have many stories for you.
Cool.
And they did not all bring me joy when they happened. Let me say that.
Right. All things, as we've been told recently, if something doesn't bring you joy, you need to get rid of it. I think it's Marie Kondo who's been saying.
Yes.
One of the things I said is, if this unactionable alert doesn't bring you joy.
I just saw that before we got on the phone. Yes.
Time to get rid of it. Cool.
And you know what? Honestly, in the moment during some of these stories, my gut was totally like, exactly that, like, throw it away. I want nothing to do with this. But as I kind of tell my stories, you'll see that I actually learned a lot from them, and it really kind of shaped my career and what I did. And I was not expecting that at the time. But once I saw your tweet, I started thinking, I'm like, I have a lot of really cute stories, one not so cute story that didn't bring me joy, but being on call really kind of shaped where I ended up going. And I didn't really realize it till I saw your tweet about your new podcast.
Cool. So why don't we get started and talk about where you've been?
Yes.
So you don't necessarily need to give us a full, background, but I'd love to hear kind of some of the things you've done and when you were on call and,
sure.
Your history.
So my first stint out of college was as a customer, right? Mm-hmm. And I ended up by chance, basically, working with VMware, Citrix, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I worked for those companies for about 5.5 years, just straight up customer work. So we were doing a lot of on-call for the virtualization environment.
And I apologize if I'm asking you to give your age in a way, but what year around would you say this started?
That was 2006.
Cool. All
right. So now you all can figure out how old I am. That's okay. I don't mind.
Okay.
So those were like really early days of virtualization, right? Mm-hmm. VMware was just like really starting to catch on.
Yes.
And from there, and this will tie into my story, I went to NetApp, where I was a systems engineer. Not necessarily on call, but if my customer had an issue, I was on call. And that was just something I did. Not every SE did that. But I felt that it was really important to be involved with, my customers dealing with all the stuff. I'm going to help them out.
Absolutely.
From there, I still at NetApp, I went to go be a technical marketing engineer and solutions architect for the FlexPod solution. So it was basically... Cool. NetApp hardware, Cisco servers and switches, and VMware on top of it. So all the things I kind of really like. And then most recently, I am now at Veeam as a product strategy technologist, where I'm doing all sorts of cool things with data availability solutions and starting to dabble a little more in the security area, where I kind of started out my career and did a lot of master's work on it. And some early in my career left that all, went to heads down virtualization, got my VCDX. Mm-hmm. So now I'm starting to look into some of that again and get back into that. So that's really fun.
Awesome. So when I kind of came into technology around 98, 99, virtualization still, was kind of things that we remembered around BSD jails and Solaris, mm-hmm. and things like that. So when I do remember virtualization starts really taking on, a more important role, and I hate saying, over and over again, but I really am guessing. So if anybody remembers the actual release date of some of these like virtualization kernels, send me a tweet or something. But I remember, it was around 2004, 2005, around then, we started seeing virtualization become so important to how distribution of systems is made because...
Yeah, exactly.
Costs, I think, is what it really learned from the era of the dot-com bubble, which I am like a post-child of the original, sitting like 94 to 98 dot-com bubble. People like me kind of came around afterwards to see the fact.
Clean up the carnage.
There was some carnage, and maybe you can kind of see if this is the way you felt, because I like to have this kind of conversation with people who came in around the time of the growth of virtualization. Did you really notice that it was about creating structure in virtualization as opposed to how do we get it on a machine? Because I felt that the hardest part was creating structure around all the different types of VMs you may need, the different use cases, the different types. And once you started seeing better ways of organizing it, structuring it.
Yeah, absolutely. How to build your clusters, how to design them, what kind of virtual machines to deploy. Like, I remember specifically, you had to sell us your soul to get a VM with more than one CPU. You had to prove that you needed it and it was going to work, because people would be like, would come to me and be like, what's the biggest VM that you can give me? I'm like, how about you tell me what you actually need and you go from there. So there was a lot in the early days just because, you know, virtualization was still developing, right? And not all the technology was there for multi-CPU stuff, and sometimes they ran really bad. So a lot of it, was organization. How do I make sure that my virtual machines don't impact each other, all that kind of stuff. There was a lot of that stuff going on besides the infrastructure.
Yeah, and I think that that's one of the things that really creates really great on-call people is there with the multitude of layers that you come in to experience when you're doing some sort of virtualization on bare metal equipment, the switching gear that's associated with ensuring things like, you know, vMotion. Mm-hmm. So I think that...
there was no vMotion when I got started.
Yeah. And that's the crazy thing is that, you know, we've watched as an industry virtualization become something that was really good to have if you can... You can do it, which means you had to have the right people in-house. And it sounds like you became one of those right people. And then eventually, as virtualization became more organized, is the way I like to think about it, where there were better front ends for virtualization to actually see it. I know VMware ended up creating better client-based software. So
yeah, absolutely.
Review what your solutions look like, look at the health, and then have that go into other larger monitoring systems. I mean, this is the way I look at it, is that virtualization really was able to grow because of the work people at places like VMware.
When this got started, monitoring was when you got a page that something wasn't working right. Like, that was the extent of it.
And that's the nice part about, like, the fact that the virtualization providers, everything, and I talk about pre-cloud virtualization, that their goal was to ensure that it integrated with systems that you were already using. And I think that that's kind of the concept of the cloud that we have now, is that the more that you can integrate these newer, easier ways to virtualize and integrate them into things like your monitoring. And for early on,
you want it all to be seamless, right? When you go to the cloud, you want to be able to run it with all the tools you're used to using. You don't want increase in operational overhead, because that kind of defeats the purpose, right? You want it to be easy.
So that's really cool. I think I kind of get where you came from, because I remember that time period a lot. And for you pre-cloud kids, or I should say what you cool pre-cloud kids that are out
there. I used to joke when this whole cloud thing started, because, you know, it started as a buzzword, probably like 2010 is when people started using it. And we're looking at it and like, we've been doing cloud for like years. What are you people talking about? Look at our data center. Oh, that's like, the cloud, people.
I've been setting up Zen on machines forever. I've been using KVM. What are you talking about?
Yeah, right. Come on, I built the cloud 5 years ago.
But I guess the cool thing is that those kind of technologies translated for a lot of us to move forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
In our careers. So I want to hear more about your career. How did you end up kind of making that move to Veeam?
I wanted to do something different. Okay. And when I was doing my VCDX, I used Veeam solutions as part of how I was going to provide availability for my environment. Mm-hmm. And Rick Vanover, who's an awesome guy, MVP, Cisco champion, VExpert, everything really big in the community. I can't tell you how many hours he spent on the phone with me, kind of giving me a crash course in architecting Veeam. And the more I dug into it then, just the cooler I thought it was. So I had actually chatted with Rick at VMworld, and he was saying, you know, I might have a spot on my team, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, yeah, keep me in mind, because, you know, I really like this product. And that's something that I feel strongly about working on the vendor side. I have to believe in the product. I have to like the product. I have to think it's a great product to go work there. Absolutely. I went to go work at NetApp because a big portion of my vSphere environment had an NFS backend. Mm-hmm. And I never had any problems with that, and that was awesome. Other side, we'll talk about that, some issues. So that's kind of what drove me to NetApp initially, too, is I liked working with the product. And I got exposed to that product because of some outages and stuff like that. So
awesome. So I personally had NetApp outages in the past. We won't get into those because we want to talk about your story. So as we kind of get into the story, it is time to talk about the rules.
Okay.
A podcast has
I didn't rules. Do it. I didn't do it.
Okay, that's fine. You won't break these rules because they're very, very easy rules. I mention them every episode, and I'll continue to do it. One, don't incriminate yourself. So please, if you did something, don't wind up in a lot of trouble. Just tell us some brief details that doesn't incriminate you. Don't incriminate others. We all in the world of DevOps believe in blamelessness in our postmortems, and that includes this virtualization discussion around outages. So if a particular person or a specific kind of technology that maybe is a vendor, we don't want to make them feel bad, but please give us some detail. And anything, so don't incriminate others. And more than anything, help us learn. Help us learn what you learned by going through what might have been a pretty big nightmare. So we're going to get started by asking you quickly, how long were you on call and how many different places would you say you were on call?
As a customer, I was on call two different places for a combination of about 5.5 years. And then I was an SE for 3 years, which was, I guess, not on call, but kind of on call, because I was always there with my customers in the unlikely event that we had an issue.
Like, so that's pretty much on-demand customer on call.
Yeah, like I just always went with them. I brought them, you know, coffee or whatever. Like I wanted to be there and make sure. And I got really good at reading NetApp auto supports. Really, really good at it. Really good. Interesting skill.
And then after that, were you part of like a regular rotation as well?
No, after that, I went into NetApp product engineering. So that wasn't really as on call.
So the really earlier portion of your career, were those on call sessions part of like a rotation of sorts?
The first company I worked for is there were two of us doing VMware, the senior guy and me. So we just, it was us. And then the second company, there was an on call rotation.
Okay, because I remember a lot of my first entrances into on-call, there really wasn't like an idea of how it's handled. It was just something's broken, who's available. We both know I can get to it first, and then that's the way I knew on-call for a little while, and that's not the way you do on-call. And I think that the one thing we learn through different periods of being on-call is that the wrong way presents itself pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So you were on call for a few years, and eventually you probably accumulated a number of stories to which you base a lot of what you tell people about on how to do things right today. because I know that that's kind of what I do, is you go back to those stories and say, you know, this was really messed up, but I'm going to tell you how to not ever live through that. So why don't you give us one of those stories?
All right. First, I have two cute little tiny stories that are really quick. So as I said, I started working in 2006 after college. I got really heavy into virtualization in 2007. And then when the senior guy went to VMworld in 2008, I was in charge of the VMware environment for the first time ever on my own. So Monday morning, I log into my computer and host failed. It's like, really? Seriously? And I'm like, oh no. And you know, the guy's like, don't worry, that's what the HA is for. Just, you know, go get the hard drive replaced or whatever it was, failed in it. And then later that same day, a vSphere 254 host failed. And the first one was vSphere 3, so HA, all that good stuff. And the 254 environment was like the early old stuff we were trying to get off of. And I didn't even have like root passwords or anything. And this thing was dead. And I'm like, all right, I can probably just get away with like restarting the management services, you know, let me just reboot the thing. So I finally found the person with the VMware expert, and I'm making air quotes right now, that set up the environment. And I was like, can you give me the password? He wouldn't give me the password. I'm like, all right, whatever. I'm like, can you reboot the host? And he's like, I don't know how to do that. I'm like, connect to the host, type reboot, and hit enter. And that brought it back up, and it was fine. And it was just a matter of, okay, let's get everything off this older environment faster since we're starting to have problems.
Sure.
The second cute little story was, you know, just endless tickets for reasons that weren't VMware reasons. And I remember specifically, I would get a ticket every time a VM missed a backup. And I'm like, that has nothing to do with me. I do not care. Please do not page me. And I think that was funny just because of foreshadowing. I kept on seeing all these VMs missing their backups. And now I essentially work for a backup company. So I find that kind of funny, and I didn't think about that until I saw your tweet about the podcast. But it was always like weird stuff you get pages for, and you're like, no, that goes to the platform team. It has nothing to do with the server being virtual. Like, someone's like, oh, it's a VM, page the VMware team. They must have done something. I'm like, no, that's not how this works. It's just a regular server. Don't think of it as a VM. So that was definitely a learning curve with a lot of operations teams where they're like, oh, it's virtual machine. Here you go, VMware team, go fix it.
So essentially one of those things where people kind of just make assumptions about who is supposed to take care of the problem.
Right, and that wasn't well defined back then, you know what I mean? So it was like, I don't think there were any criteria for when you page to. It was just they were used to it, and they started seeing all these VMs, and like, oh, this is scary and new. Send it to that team.
Yeah, the over-the-wall thing, I believe, is a real common occurrence. At least it felt like a common occurrence.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Oh, isn't that like everything, like blame another team? It's never your fault. It's always network. It's always DNS. It's always someone else.
I can. It's always DNS, isn't it? So what have you got for us next?
All right, here's the big one, right?
Okay.
So this was at the second company I worked for, and it was like a really big VMware environment. And they divided things kind of into three buckets. Let's just call them tier one, two, and three for simplicity. Tier one was production, but it was like really important production. Mm-hmm. Tier two is like, you know, still important production, but not tier one. Mm-hmm. And then tier three was dev test and like whatever.
Sure.
So what we noticed one day, and I was on call this week, because I remember it was weekly on call. It was my week. And what we noticed was that someone was trying to commit a snapshot for VM, and it would like run for like 3 hours and fail. Like the snapshots just wouldn't commit. And that was like the only thing we saw. And we're like, oh, let's open a ticket with VMware. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just, there's something wrong. But I think it was either that night or the next day, like everything slowed down. Everything was just running super slow, and then we just started having performance issues left and right, and then stuff was just like not working. And turns out it was storage, interestingly enough, right? Because we're looking at all our stuff, and I remember the senior guy from the first company, he was there with me, and I remember him telling me, he goes, remember, look at the storage first, because ESXi hosts do not like their storage messed with. Like, they were like, the hosts weren't acting right and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. So of course, and we all joke about this, like the big outage conference bridges that everybody hates, like every 5 minutes, who's on the call? You hear people not muted, they're chomping and they're eating, they're falling asleep, the dog's barking in the background, like everybody makes fun of it, but like you're always on these outage bridges.
God, I've been on so many of them where you hear someone go, you always hear in the middle of it,
what?
Where someone goes to their like their significant other, and then you just all of a sudden hear,
it's a mute button, people. And use it.
And then you're, oh no, I'm sorry, I'm just talking with my wife. So yeah, and then all of a sudden you hear in the background, and so yeah, I've totally.
But anyway, we figured out pretty quickly that it was a storage issue, not a VMware issue, right? Not a technical, but I was still on the call because I'm a representative from the VMware team. So I'm watching them like issue all these commands on storage arrays and do all this stuff that I knew nothing about storage other than how to put it into VMware, right?
Mm-hmm. So here's a LUN, move on.
Yeah, right. Here's a LUN, here's an NFS mount, blah, blah, blah. So I was sitting there watching, and I'm like, all right, whatever. Well, maybe I'll learn a couple things. And I did. And like this outage just went on for days and days. And it was like stuff was like kind of working, but not really. So it was unpleasant. But I spent a lot of time with the storage team. And one of the gentlemen that was on the storage team, I ended up becoming pretty good friends with. And we had both decided at that point the company was offering like buyout packages to leave, basically. Mm-hmm. So we had both decided to take the packages, and I started spending a lot of time with him on storage. He would teach me storage stuff because it was something that I didn't know much about, and I was intrigued by this massive outage that I was dealt with. And funny how you have it, I end up working at NetApp as a systems engineer right after that from the experience that I got through this storage outage, right?
Sure. Sometimes learning from failure can create a lot of success for individuals.
And it wasn't like, and the specifics of the outage, I don't remember exactly, but it wasn't like somebody messed something up, like this storage array, and it wasn't NetApp array, but I'm not going to say what it was. There was just something wrong with it. like it had a bug or it was just
whether it's
too much on it. Like there was just something wrong with this array.
Gotcha. And what it sounds like you kind of took from it, it was a push in the direction that you kind of wanted to be able to go in next.
And I didn't even know I wanted to go in that direction. I had no idea.
I think like, I totally get that too. Sometimes you're inspired by things that just get thrown your way. And because being tossed work, especially when you're on call and all of a sudden you're just like, oh, this is broken, got to work on it, can create a lot of stress in an individual.
Yeah, and I wasn't even doing most of the work. I was just kind of watching it be done and mm-hmm. learning about stuff. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. This is stuff I didn't know before. So I guess I didn't realize how much of a learning experience on call actually can be in some cases, right? Oh. Because as much as people are munching on the phone and talking to their significant others and dogs are barking on those bridges, if it's not actually your outage and you're not the one on the chopping block, you can actually learn a lot from the other teams who are having the issues. And you kind of feel bad for them. It's a good opportunity to kind of absorb knowledge.
Yeah, I've been in situations that are kind of around storage failures. And I've worked with people who are, you know, on-site data center techs and listening to them fight with things like failed particular partitions and then you're having to spend hours with them saying, well, have you tried this? Let's get a KVM on that. Let's try that. And you really feel for them. You know that there's things that they're doing on the physical side that you simply just can't as a, you know, an on-call kind of remote person in the situation. But I feel like in those situations, I gleaned so much like about certain aspects of BIOS configurations mm-hmm. on hardware. So I do fully understand what you're coming from as far as, you know, sometimes being that ear in the middle of an on-call, you know, conference bridge can teach you a lot.
It does. It really does. And it was funny because I think there were a couple on calls. I think it worked out. I was on call like every 6 weeks because it was split mm-hmm. between all the team members. I think there were like 3 or 4 in a row where they were like storage issues. And I kept on getting all of them. Then I go work for NetApp and everybody's like, so let me get this straight. And they were joking. So you anytime you're on call, the storage, just something happens and you're going to work for a storage company. I'm like, yes, exactly.
That's funny. So let me ask you a really kind of wrapping up kind of question. I kind of bring these questions in toward the end of the conversation. First of all, what do you think you really could give as far as advice to someone who, say, you know, really is new and on call
and probably hates it, because I think we all hate it at some point.
What's something that maybe somebody's struggling with and you can give them advice? Like, how can you say how to make the best of being on call?
Honestly, do what I didn't. I didn't even realize I was doing it, is use it as a learning opportunity. A lot of times, you know, it might not be your problem because you're the on-call person. Like, I literally used to volunteer for on-call stuff after this. Like, gosh. there was an instance where they were doing NetApp maintenance on vSphere, mm-hmm. on the ESXi clusters, on the storage backing them. And I knew from what I had learned, I'm like, okay, they're going to fail over the NetApp controller and nothing is going to happen. It's just going to keep working. So I volunteered for on-call and I sat and I watched them do the maintenance and the upgrade or everything just to learn something new.
That's awesome.
So everything is kind of a learning opportunity. Even if it's your problem, that's a learning opportunity too. And I know it does not bring you joy in the moment and you want to throw it out and just get over it. But if you can't in the moment learn something from it, think about it after the fact. When the event is over, when you don't have to slam Red Bulls anymore or drink a case of Coke or whatever you have to do to stay awake, think about it and kind of say, well, what did I learn? What was I exposed to? What did I see the other teams doing? Is there anything I found interesting and I want to learn more about? And I've noticed in my career, maybe it's just the people I've approached. If you go to someone on another team and are like, hey, you want to have lunch sometime so you can tell me all about what you do or something like that? People don't usually say no.
Yeah, I found if I block out time with people and specifically say, like, what you did in X scenario is really, you know, piqued my interest.
I love getting other people to talk about what they do in themselves, honestly. I hate talking about myself. I'd rather listen than talk.
Yeah, I think that it's great to kind of know that for the most part, technology has been a give and share kind of industry. I think that open source has proven that to us, that because open source is all about sharing what you've produced and then ensuring people are able to either learn or do something with that. Whether it's, you know, some sort of operating system, individual software, or, you know, a library that fixes something.
Right.
But the fact is that being able to share information and learn from one another, I think, is one of the things that keeps people with technology hungry.
Isn't that like the best part of all this, though? Like, I always thought it was.
Yeah, I love the fact that we get so many different problems. Every day there's a new, like, you know, what does Werner say? Everything breaks all the time, always. And, and it's true. In the world of technology, something's always broken. You more than likely don't know about it.
You learn more about the stuff that's – you learn more from the stuff that's broken than the stuff that's working fine.
Precisely.
Like if something's working great, you're not learning anything. It's just doing what it was supposed to, especially if you didn't set it up, right? If you walk into an environment and nothing ever goes wrong, how are you ever going to learn anything?
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's why I love the idea around the chaos engineering world that's kind of come from Netflix and in other kind of products and businesses that have come up in the last year or two. Like the idea that now testing for failure as opposed to waiting for failure.
It's kind of fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, let's break stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So, Melissa, I'm going to kind of wrap things up here.
Sure.
Really, really awesome.
It was so nice to meet you. I'm glad I saw your random tweet that one day.
Thank you. Hey, maybe I'll get myself to VMworld or one of these things. We have a mutual friend in Paloma Schmidt, the Exchange Goddess.
Exchange Goddess, yes.
She is part of the Microsoft.
I joke with her all the time. I'm like, Puma, I can't even spell Exchange or DAG. You are like the one.
She's really great. So let's tell everybody again how they can find you on the internet.
Sure. You can find me at vmiss.net on Twitter at vmiss33. That's 33 the number.
Mm-hmm. And if they need any help, they can always get in touch with you over at Veeam. So thank you very much for a few minutes of your time today. It was really cool kind of learning where you came from and how you got there. So once again, everybody, this was Melissa Palmer. She is from Veeam and is a product strategy technologist. Thanks again for being part of the podcast today.
Thanks for having me, Jay.
Have a good one.
You too.
Everybody, we'll be back in just a minute. We'll finish up the show, say goodbye, and give you all a big hug. Well, that is the first episode for Infrastructure Week. Thank you very much, Melissa, for getting in touch. And if you'd like to be on the podcast or you'd just like to get in touch, you can email me. It is oncallnightmares@gmail.com. That is oncallnightmares@gmail.com. You can feel free to reach us on Twitter. It's @oncallnightmare. Or you can reach out to me personally @jdestro. So we'll see you later this week with the next episode for Infrastructure Week. Thanks a lot for listening, and thanks for listening to the On Call Nightmares podcast.